and welcome back to the Dreamcast. I am your host, Denise Walsh. I combine science, scripture, and stories that will inspire you to dive deep, break through your own personal glass ceiling, and design a life of your dreams. Do you feel like you've not been able to make headway in achieving your goals? Or did you start the year pumped, ready to move forward on making things happen and simply lost your way? Things don't need to just get better. They actually can be better. In Design Your Dream Life, I'll show you a proven pathway to take you from where you are now to a life filled with joy, wholeness, success, and fulfillment. I'll give you the keys to not just developing a plan, but taking massive empowered action to make your dreams a reality. Turn roadblocks into stepping stones and leverage the power of gratitude and forgiveness. Let's face it, taking massive empowered action and making your dreams a reality isn't always easy. So I'll be there with you every step of the way. Visit dreamlifetoolkit.com to purchase your copy of Design Your Dream Life, obtain resources, and join our free community. Again, that's dreamlifetoolkit.com. Big welcome back to the Dreamcast. You guys, our next guest is a nationally recognized expert in entrepreneurship and business strategy. He is horrified by the significant decline of entrepreneurship in America. And to be honest, if this is true, I'm excited to hear about it. Me too. Goodness. He has made it his mission to rescue 1 million entrepreneurs from traditional employment. Amen. His new book called Boss Brain reveals a scientifically proven system that unlocks readers' true potential and unleashes their entrepreneurial instincts so they can leave traditional employment forever. That is the real American dream. I remember when I quit my job, I thought the worst thing that could happen is I have to go back to work. And after over a decade of being a work from home mama, I am like, yeah, that is the worst thing that could happen. So big Dreamcast, welcome to Trey Williams.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to have this conversation with you. The statistic and your reaction to that is the same reaction that I get from most folks. So I think your listeners are really going to enjoy it.
Well, and being an entrepreneur for over a decade and helping people start a side business, whether they quit their job or not, they're able to earn additional income through starting a home business or starting to their coaching programs and things like that. And I love helping and coaching people to live their passion and make a living from it. So tell me about this. Why is American entrepreneurship at an all-time low?
So the short answer is we are becoming victims of our own success. The long answer is that there is an ancient battle being waged in your brain between our instinctive, hardwired optimism and our instinctive desire for certainty. And those two things are at odds with one another. This idea that you can envision a future that is better than your past or present and work to make that vision a reality, this optimism. Tali Sherratt's book, The Optimism Bias, is a great read for you to understand how this is in our DNA. But at the same time, we all have this incredible need for certainty. And Mother Nature hardwired us this way because she needed some of us to load a ship and sail to the other side of the horizon to see what's there. But she needed some others to stay behind just in case there was nothing on the other side of the horizon, right? So this was a crucial part of our development. And it didn't interfere with entrepreneurialism until we've reached the stage where we are now, where the base of Maslow's hierarchy is pretty solidified in the United States. You know that you're somewhat safe, you're somewhat in shelter, you have a decent expected standards of living. Our quality of life metrics have been on the rise since this country began. And now that those are certain, we're much more resistant to change, and we're really allowing our need for certainty to overcome our genetic hardwired need for optimism.
Ooh, it's interesting you say that, resistant to change, because I find that people will stay where they are, even if they don't like it, because it's certain, because it's comfortable, because at least I know the paperwork.
Yeah, in the book, I call that predictable adequacy. And I come right out of the gate in the very first chapter talking about a variety of things historically, all the way back 10 or 12,000 years ago to the city of Jericho and forward through the Roman Empire. I can give you examples of how this has become more and more prevalent, where as soon as we have this adequacy, we become resistant to change. The good news for your listeners is we also talk in the book about what I call the Goldilocks zone. And what this is, it's the place in your life where comfort is predictable enough that you're willing to invite a little bit of change, but it's not so certain that you're resistant to change. And those two variables combined is a great way to describe the middle class, which ironically enough is exactly where the vast majority of entrepreneurs come from. Those at the opposite ends of the bell curve, the wealthiest among us and those of us who are least wealthy, are least likely to take this entrepreneurial leap, so to speak. And it is the middle class in this Goldilocks zone. And we're really reliant on them, but fewer and fewer of them every year are starting new businesses. Mm.
So before we dive into the psychology behind it all, I'd love to hear a bit of your story. How did you become interested in this work? How did you dive into it? Tell me a bit about what got you here.
I was always a terrible employee, and I'll admit this readily. And maybe I wasn't terrible, but the point is my optimism was always a heavy part of my life. And my vision for the future was always one that was better than where I was. And maybe I wasn't in the moment. Maybe I wasn't as present as some, but I just recognized this as part of who I was. And I ended up landing in the franchise industry 20 some odd years ago. And then I was surrounded by people who shared that belief, surrounded by entrepreneurs. So I just thought, okay, this is normal. Everybody thinks that the glass is half full and let's go do this. And it's totally possible. But the longer I spent in the franchise industry in the corporate world, I had the honor of being able to lead up a couple of international brands. I saw this duality that I mentioned earlier, this struggle play out in real time in candidates who would come in, who want to start their own business. And when we talk about all that is possible, they would get excited and they would say, gosh, this is going to be amazing. And then we talked about the inherent risks that are involved. It's like another person started speaking. It was like two voices were inside their head. And in the introduction to the book, I actually say that we have two voices in our head. And I realized that I myself had heard these two voices when the couple of times in my career, I lost my job due to mergers and acquisitions, found myself unemployed. And there I was sitting at the crossroads between optimism and certainty. And I fell victim to the same duality, the same conflict. One minute I would be so certain that I was just going to start a business and I was going to take control of my future in every way, shape, and form. The next minute I would be online putting in resumes and putting in cover letters for a job. And that was really the impetus for the book. It was in about 2013 when I realized this was a real thing. It's not conjecture. Psychologists have proven this over and over. The book just manages to quantify it in the lens of entrepreneurship and sort of explain away why this is happening to all of us. It's really a staggering statistic.
Well, and I think of that vision and optimism versus certainty and expectation. You know, you kind of know what to expect within your life. And so there's stability with
that.
Right. And the balance between having a vision for your future and expecting the best and going for more versus the stability of whatever it could be. It could be your business. It could be a job. It could be your stay-at-home mom and you know what to expect, but you're feeling called for more. I think that balance is something that with every single pivot decision we often wrestle through. I mean, you think of somebody who's at a job they don't like, and they might not necessarily go into entrepreneurship, but they are looking for another job and they still have that same dichotomy. Do I stay where I am, even if I don't like it, or do I take the risk of trying something new and creating a new vision for myself?
Absolutely.
It's so interesting because I feel like I was a hard worker. I was like a good student. I was a great employee. I'm a bloom where I'm planted kind of girl,
right.
But I needed to be told what to do.
Right.
And I think that's our school system, right? Our school system creates great employees. I had to learn the vision part.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny that you mentioned that. So chapter 3 in the book is all about school and college.
Yeah.
And this narrative that you're supposed to go to school, get a job, buy a house, right? This sort of blueprint for the American life. If you look at it in the context of our brain, it has existed for about 0.4 seconds if the existence of our brain was 60 seconds. So let's just say out of the 200 years our brain has been around was a minute long. That what we're being told now, go to school, get a job, buy a
normal
house. Right, is less than half a second of it. So it's no wonder that we're struggling with it. We've never had to endure this from a biological standpoint, from a psychological standpoint. We're dealing with brand new challenges here. So let's talk about school for a second. There are about 5,000 colleges in America, colleges and universities. Out of those, about 230, or roughly 4% or so, offer entrepreneurship or small business as a major. So let me say that again. 96% of our universities do not offer entrepreneurship or small business as a major. And the lesson is very, very clear. The lesson is we are grooming you to be an employee.
Exactly.
And that is the goal. It was something created out of the Industrial Revolution when everybody needed employees. And then during the baby boom of the mid-1940s, since then, entrepreneurship has dropped nearly every year since the mid-1940s of the baby boom. And that was when this sort of collegiate / home ownership narrative began.
What's interesting, and again, you know, those who are coming out of this system who are like me, maybe I was a hard worker. I know how to do X, Y, and Z. How do we learn the entrepreneur or the vision, or maybe even gain more confidence in taking risks?
I love that you phrased the question this way, because you don't need to learn how to be an entrepreneur. You need to unlearn how to be an employee. And let me be more clear about this. You've been taught to plug yourself into cycles, plug yourself into obligations, chain yourself to mortgages, put everything cyclical in your life so that your day-to-day is managed on a minute-by-minute basis, the same commute, the same drive, the same desk, the same life, the same people every day. And then you drive that commute back home. You know, maybe at the end of the month, you have some money left over. Maybe you don't, and you're just maintaining this life. So entrepreneurship is about living your life, not maintaining it. And you don't have to learn to be an entrepreneur. Mother Nature hardwired you to be an entrepreneur. It's been in the past 100 years or so since we've learned how to be an employee. And that's what you have to unlearn.
Oh, unlearn. And I hear you even saying, like, tap into who you already are.
100%. Yeah. So that phrase is actually in the introduction to the book. It's not about an identity. You know, it's not about being able to look around you and say, this is the person that I was born into. This is the environment around. Therefore, this is who I am. It's about recognizing not who you are, but what you are. And you are the product of this lineage of folks for thousands and thousands of years who have defied the odds in 1,000 different ways and who spread us all around the globe, not because they were okay with predictable adequacy. If that was the case, we would be in one small little area of the Middle East and Northern Africa, and that would be the only place we ever existed. But, you know, sometime in the past, one of our ancestors said, this is not enough. And I believe that a better future exists for me. And she took that leap.
This is super interesting to me because, again, like I'm coming from the employee mind, and I grew into an entrepreneur. And part of it was doing exactly like you said, being still, being quiet, listening to myself, and starting to be creative again. Because I grew up thinking I'm not creative. I don't even know how to draw. I don't know. And what I found is that leadership or being a visionary was a lot about seeing what's possible, not necessarily what's in front of me. And that getting my creative juices flowing helped to stimulate that again.
Yeah. So the book illustrates 4 instincts that we're all hardwired with. And it's funny to hear you say that you're not creative. I'm sure you've heard of George Land's landmark study where about 40 or 50 years ago, he used the NASA test for creativity that NASA was using to select astronauts and found that 95% or so of all 5-year-olds scored at genius levels for creativity. And then as they matriculated through regular school and high school and post-secondary school, he tested them again when they reached adults. And by the time they were 30 years old, 2% tested at genius levels. If that's not blatantly obvious evidence of how we are indoctrinated into the idea that new ideas are harmful and new ideas are dangerous, then I don't know what is. And here's the irony behind it. Think about this. So we shun these new ideas. We shun innovation while simultaneously saying and heralding that we have a preference for it. We talk all the time about how creativity is important and innovation is important, but you try to institute something creative or new in someone's life who has a lot of predictable adequacy, and you will find a tremendous amount of resistance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's 4 pillars What are they?
They're going to sound really simple when I tell them to you. And you're going to say, well, of course, those are really blatantly obvious. But when you understand in the context how they've affected your life after reading the book, you'll appreciate them. So the first one is belief. And each of these pillars is made up of three different components. Belief is the first. The second is accountability. And this is one that we're having a lot of trouble with in the world right now. Folks taking ownership for the decisions that they've made and taking ownership for what they have allowed to control them. We set up these systems that control us and then blame the very systems that we set up for controlling us. The third one is focus, which in today's goldfish attention span world that we have is a real, real challenge right now. And the last is creativity. And when you harness these three and these four in tandem, and you allow your belief to create accountability, and you allow your accountability to yield focus, and then your focus yields creativity, guess what ends up happening? Your creativity then reaffirms your belief and maintains this cycle.
Yeah, it reminds me of the fact that you grow in confidence as you take action. You know, some people wait till they have certainty, until they try something new. They need to know that it's going to work before they take that
absolutely
step, but it doesn't work
so,
that way.
So let me tell you two great stories about this. There was a study done about the way we learn and the three different modules that psychologists say that we're learning. And those individuals who require the most certainty prior to taking action actually lose the efficacy of that certainty once they have it. They wait so long until they have the information that even once they've had the information, they still don't take action. So it's not as if gathering that information actually made them comfortable with it. The other aspect of this is that if you're looking at your focus and your accountability and your creativity independently, none of those things are going to work by themselves. You can't say, I'm a creative person, so I can go start my own, right? You can't say, I have a tremendous amount of accountability and then simultaneously look at your phone for 3 hours a day, right? Or watch TV 4 hours a day or any other various distractions. So in the end of this, belief, where everything starts, is reverse engineered. What you said earlier about you kind of have to do things in order to believe them is dead on. Beliefs are reverse engineered. So you can't wake up one morning and say, I believe I'm an entrepreneur and I'm going to be wildly successful. Everyone needs evidence for this. Well, the way to gather evidence is to take small actions. And then those small actions change the way you perceive yourself. And you begin to see yourself as someone who can accomplish those goals. So it's important for those non-believers to take action regardless.
So for the past 100 years, we have been taught to be really good employees. And while society is advancing, it seems as though individual fulfillment and happiness are waning because we are under so much stress, maybe little community, if you think of, like, we don't have time for anything because we're doing this J-O-B. So why do you think that is?
Well, we're in a flashpoint in America right now with employment, with the 20, 25 million people trying to figure out where their next paycheck comes from right now. We're at a flashpoint in a lot of ways socially, aside from COVID as well. And all of this is a symptom of feeling out of control of your own life. And society is advancing at incredible rates because we have yielded control of our own rights and have become sort of assimilated into this snowball that's rolling downhill of what America is right now. And that's why the decline of entrepreneurship has become so precipitous. In the last, let me give you an example. About 20 years ago, entrepreneurship in America was around 12.5%, somewhere in there. Today, it's 6.5%. So in a span of 2 decades, it has been cut in half. And what that means is by the mid-2040s, 99% of Americans will work for the other 1%. So you think you see unrest now when everyone decries the 99% of the wealth being in the hands of the 1%. Wait until 99% of the people work for those 1%. That's what will create tremendous civil unrest. And nobody wants that. Everyone wants to reverse this trend. And what I love about small business and entrepreneurship is the one unifying factor that everyone can get behind. Being your own boss is the American dream. It is not home ownership. Let me say this again. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac love to paint this picture that being tied to a 30-year mortgage is the American dream. And it is not. The American dream was defined in 1931 by James Truslow Adams in his book, The Epic of America. And the American dream is the ability for everyone to achieve all that is within their innate abilities. And right now, the assimilation that we're going through and becoming part of the cogs in the wheel of this empire are preventing us from achieving what our God-given gifts would allow us to, and that's causing unrest.
So for those, I mean, we are at a record unemployment rate because of the last few months, and really society has been turned upside down. It may be a good time for people to say, okay, well, what I was doing before wasn't working. Maybe right. I should change things up a bit. Maybe I don't need to be busy 24/7, and I should really ask myself, what gifts can I give back to the world, and what are my passions, and all of these kinds of things. So if somebody's out there and they're like, all right, well, life has already been flipped upside down. My job is gone. This is uncertain. I'm not sure. And they are thinking maybe I should start a business. What advice would you have for them?
So I think now, let me preface this with, now is a great time to start a business. So I'll give you some tangible reasons why. Number one, commercial real estate costs are beginning to decline as we expected they would this fall after the flash unemployment. They always trickle behind a little bit behind unemployment. So that's beginning to decline. Second generation space is becoming available in retail and hospitality industry. So here's space that already has infrastructure, already has mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, has already been outfitted to do maybe whatever it is that you hope is going to be done. So you've got this space that's built for you. You've got landlords who are motivated to get tenants in place. You've got the SBA with $350 million earmarked for new development, not just PPP loans. I'm talking about new development businesses trying to spur those who are on the cusp to actually take that leap. And you got 20 million people out there looking for a job. You can choose from among the best. You can find the employees who are the best among them. And it wasn't this way a year ago when unemployment was 3%. You know, the ones that were left over maybe didn't have the work ethic that you had. And that made finding the right people tough. So any one of these four would be a powerful motivator to me. But the four of them combined, that's an unprecedented moment in history for entrepreneurship. And the advice that I would give everyone today is there will never, and there has never been a perfect time. The time to start is now. And if you're afraid of doing that, then measure your risk according to your own tolerance for that. And the way to feel comfortable with this is one of the things we say late in the book, which is risk and uncertainty are not the same thing. There is a quantifiable value of risk. If it's going to take you $5,000 to start your little side gig that you think should grow into a full-time gig, then the risk is $5,000. There is nothing uncertain about that. You know exactly what that risk is. So understand that there's no difference, that there's an enormous difference between risk and uncertainty, and recognize that there is never a perfect time.
Mm, that's a beautiful way to put it, because the risk is, it's a decreased risk when you know exactly what you need to do, or you know exactly what the risk is. And then you reverse engineer it. Well, what do I need to do to make back that 5,000? What would that exactly really look like? And it turns into more of a plan.
Yeah, well, you know, they probably all thought their jobs were stable and not risky a year ago. And how did that work out? Right. So really, the only thing you can count on is yourself. And 26 paychecks a year are there until they're not.
So tell me a bit about how small businesses can serve the community. Because we, you know, again, we're like, all right, time to get back to our roots a bit and say, where are these local farms? And what small business in my local town can I serve? And how can we bring things out of the big box stores and into the small business? So why do you think small businesses are so valuable to our growing communities?
Well, small businesses, despite what the television would make you believe, still employ almost 2/3 of all of the jobs in the United States. So big business employs a massive number of people, but it pales in comparison to the number of jobs that are created by small business. But it's not just those financial aspects that I think we should point to in serving your community. Entrepreneurs engage in civil activity more often. They're more philanthropic. Entrepreneurs actually donate on average about $1,200 more a year than traditional employees. Entrepreneurs are more involved in volunteer and nonprofit organizations. The sons and daughters of entrepreneurs are more likely to be entrepreneurs themselves, vastly more likely, by the way, not just a little bit more likely to be entrepreneurs themselves. And you end up creating this ripple in time by opening your own business and being self-employed, where you actually contribute unknowingly to your community by virtue of being self-employed. And that contribution ripples through time, through generations, so that if we reverse this trend, you'd actually see a more harmonious society and a more civically engaged and a more peaceful society. But the more we give up control, the less peaceful we're going to be. So it's a way to help your community, to answer your question, is start by helping yourself.
We are kind of compiling a list in our local area here of local businesses to invest in and support during this time. And in talking to those business owners, they are the ones that are giving back to the community. They're creating, you know, they're doing Thursday night concerts, and the McDonald's isn't doing that. But these local coffee shops, or, you know what I mean? And so it's been really interesting to dig into the owners of these small businesses and how they have a heart, not just for their business, but it spreads into the surrounding community and the people within it.
Yeah, there's a one-to-one ratio between the percentage of entrepreneurship in America and philanthropic activity. So as entrepreneurship has declined, so have contributions to nonprofit and charitable organizations. Those two things go hand in hand.
Well, I feel like your book, Boss Brain, really takes people from the employee mindset and moves them into an entrepreneurial mindset by unlocking what's already within them and giving them permission to take action on it.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That's absolutely the case. Give yourself permission, right, to take action on it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. And really, you're speaking my language because I was that person.
Well, I was that person.
Yeah. And I've seen the freedom and the growth. And we all know, you know, entrepreneurship is a personal development program with compensation attached, right? It's not necessarily a smooth sailing the whole time, but the person you become in the process is really part of the journey and the power behind it all.
Absolutely. Well, the journey for me is in entrepreneurship is really defined by legacy. I feel like traditional employment is filled with ambition, but the difference between ambition and legacy is ambition is what you do for yourself, and legacy is what you do for those around you and the changes that last when you're no longer here. So I feel like entrepreneurship is about building that legacy and creating change that reverberates even when you're not directly involved anymore. And 50 years from now, people can look back and say, this happened because 50 years ago, this entrepreneur made this change in society.
Awesome. So what's next for you, Trey?
Well, all of my speaking engagements have been canceled because of the virus. I am doing a tremendous amount of podcasts, and I find that actually very fulfilling because it gives me the opportunity to be quicker, and I can do one of these a day, and I'm talking to people all over the world, and it's a very exciting time. And fortunately, there still are a large group of people who would love to pack up a ship and sail beyond the horizon. And talking with those folks who have felt that urge their entire life, but it finally maybe COVID was the thing that pressed them to make that change, are starting to be very, very interested in what we're talking about right now and realizing that they have it within them. And I tell folks all the time, my mission is to rescue 1 million entrepreneurs from the bonds of traditional employment. And the reason I say that is a study revealed a few years ago that 70% of Americans wish they were self-employed. That's 100 million people who would prefer to be self-employed but aren't. That is an enormous number of people. And if we can just rescue 1 in 100 of them and say that we helped them navigate this ethereal world between traditional and self-employment, I would love to imagine the positive effects on society that would happen in 10, 20, 30 years from now. So what's next for me now is really trying to reverse that trend, to take that 6.5% of self-employment up to 7 and then to 8 and then to 9. And hopefully during my time on this planet, I can see it get back into the teens and maybe even to the 20% number where it was when the decline began in the mid-40s.
Well, and I think we often can say, oh, 2040, it's not that far away right now. But it's easy to think, oh, that won't impact us, or that's not our thing, or we don't have to worry about it. But my son accidentally, instead of saying the year 2021, he said the year 2100. And so I said, well, let's see, how old will you be in the year 2100? And we realized he will be 80 years old-ish, and right. I'll have grandchildren who are 40. You know what I mean? And
that's
you think,
right.
The year 2100 is not that far away.
It's not that far. Absolutely. That's the case. And it's when you think about it in that context, especially in relationship to the trajectory of a startup business, and it takes a few years to get that moving, and it takes a few years to grow it and scale it. And And we're really talking about a flash between the kids who are entering first grade right now will be in college when 99% of Americans work for the other 1%.
I'm letting that sink in a minute. I have a first grader.
It's scary.
Which
it's
means scary. we've now is the time to take that action.
Right? It is. I don't want to live in that world. Exactly. Yeah, I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys, you need to get boss brain, because we're all on this journey to kind of reprogram ourselves from what we were taught in the school system and to unlock, really decide to live on our own terms and take control or responsibility, both, right, of our own situations. And you can get on the wait list now to have it sent to you first at getbossbrain.com/waitlist. When is the book coming out?
Well, it's been delayed a little bit because folks aren't allowed to walk into bookstores, which is a very painful thing that's happening right now. So hopefully before the holidays, that's what we're keeping our fingers crossed on. It was pushed back from September, but it will be made available to those who are on the list that you just referenced. And we're only putting that out through podcasts a couple of months prior. So maybe before Thanksgiving, they could have one mating in their mailbox for them.
Awesome. Getbossbrain.com/waitlist. And this might be one of my group book club books that we use, because I think all entrepreneurs, no matter where they are in the process, will gain benefit from that. So thank you, Trey, for sharing your wisdom with us today and for not only stepping out in faith and taking the quote unquote certain risk that you did to create your own businesses, but then giving back to new entrepreneurs and really our kids to teach them that they don't have to work for the other 1%, that they can really take control and ownership of their life today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. I want to hear your aha moment from today's amazing episode. If you could leave a review at whatever podcast player you choose to listen from, Apple Podcast, CastBox, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening from, leave a review and share with us your favorite part of today's episode. Thanks for hanging out. And remember to dream big.